The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
All the way from Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to the Potterverse. It is a podcast dedicated to the book and film universe of Harry Potter. So grab your favorite wands and time turners. Let's step into the night and pursue that flighty temptress adventure. Hello, everyone, and welcome back. My name is Mary Larson.
My name is Blake, and I love Sirius Black. I just love Sirius, and it's actually for a very particular reason why in this chapter.
Oh.
Just great. Just outside of Snape, by far my favorite character.
I love that for you.
Like, he is the best.
And it's pretty amazing because they hate each other.
I know, and rightly so. Rightly so. And, you know, that relationship of love and hate is so finely close to each other that you can, one step or the other way, that relationship can turn very quickly. Mm-hmm. And especially when you're writing relationships like that, so that polar opposite, it's understandable why you can be attracted to someone like Snape, but at the same token, be attracted to someone like Sirius, not physically or whatever, but just like in terms of a character.
Yes.
You can appreciate. And I love Sirius Black. He's just the best.
I love it. Many of us do as well. So here we are. We are in chapter 27, Padfoot Returns. And the quote that I wanted to read for you, but Sirius held up a hand to silence Ron. When the dark mark had been conjured and the elf had been discovered holding Harry's wand, what did Crouch do? Went to look in the bushes, said Harry, but there wasn't anyone else there. Of course, Sirius muttered, pacing up and down. Of course he'd want to pin it on anyone but his own elf. And then he sacked her? Yes, said Hermione in a heated voice. He sacked her just because she hadn't stayed in her tent and let herself get trampled. Hermione, will you give it a rest with the elf? Said Ron. But Sirius shook his head and said, she's got the measure of Crouch better than you have, Ron. If you want to know what a man's like, take a good look at how he treats his inferiors, not his equals.
Very easily one of the reasons why I like Sirius Black. And when you consider how he treats Creature next book.
Yeah, it's a little
A little hypocritical.
Yeah.
And, you know, but nevertheless, it's a fair sentiment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's fair to point out. And just because he has the ability to point it out doesn't necessarily mean he has to abide by it.
Agreed.
So, you know, there's a big difference there, mm-hmm. Mary.
Yes. So, all right. Let's get into... Oh, before we do, I want to remind everybody that Blake and I are going to have a nice, busy spring podcasting up the wazoo, so mm-hmm. make sure you're following us on all of our social media channels. Just search Mary and Blake. We've got a great community on Facebook that we would love for you to join. It's the Mary and Blake group, so once again, you just type in Mary and Blake on Facebook. Love to have you there. And of course, we want to thank all of our friends at jointhenerdclan.com for keeping this and all of our podcasts going. So if we bring you Lumos in a time of Nox, if we keep company on your drives, we would love for you to think about becoming a member for as little as $2 a month at jointhenerdclan.com. All right, let's get into the show.
I solemnly swear that I'm up to no good.
Is
So once again, this is Padfoot Returns. Padfoot being, of course, our beloved Sirius Black. So in this chapter, Ron feels like a big deal for the very first time, and he is enjoying being kind of pseudo-famous. Rita Skeeter yet once again writes another article, and this time it's about Hermione and how she's just loving on Harry and loving on Crumb, and Snape tries to humiliate Harry in the process, and Harry overhears Karkaroff talking with Snape, and they meet with Sirius outside of Hogsmeade, and they talk a lot about Barty Crouch and his family.
Yes, and this chapter, Mary, I think is anchored by one very specific through line, and that is perspective. Mm-hmm. Perspective is wildly important in this chapter. First, you get to the perspective of Rita Skeeter, where she has this, she has some knowledge, but not the full picture as it relates to Hermione and Harry. Yet she does have the beat on Hermione and Crumb. Mm-hmm. There is perspective from Snape. Snape has some knowledge about what's going on in terms of his office and some of the things being stolen, but he doesn't have the whole thing. It is, he's correct that some of these things have been stolen, but he makes an assumption that it's Harry who's stealing it because he just knows it's Potter. And there's a big one here, one that it is informing the entire plot and how Harry is choosing to move forward, and that is perspective from Sirius. Sirius' perspective about Barty Crouch Jr., the Death Eaters, Snape, how Dumbledore would trust Snape, Barty Crouch himself, Bagman. It's all fueled by his perspective, which he believes to be true. Mm. And it's amazing how certain perspectives can color not only actions by yourself, but also the people that surround you, because they make decisions based on that perspective. And the author does a very, very, very important move here by having Sirius, someone who we trust, tell us that Barty Crouch Jr. is dead. Immediately, as a reader, when you are reading it in the beginning, you sign up, you co-sign.
Yes.
Barty Crouch Jr. is dead. Mm-hmm. Hey, Sirius told me so. Mm-hmm. That is such an important trick that the author uses in her giant well of tricks that she can do. It's really impressive.
Yeah.
Really, really impressive that she's able to maneuver and manipulate perspective in that way. Mm-hmm. Through somebody that we trust, who, by the way, is telling us the truth as he sees it. He's not lying, you know?
I mean, everyone in the wizarding world thinks Barty Crouch Jr. is dead.
Right.
So I agree.
Yeah.
It's what he knows for fact at that time. And it's what we, being people who are now kind of in the wizarding world alongside of him, have to believe.
Yeah.
But we as readers who've now gone through this book, and this is a spoilerific podcast, we know that actually it's not Barty Crouch Jr. And so spoiler talk for just one moment right now. So if you haven't read it, you just want to maybe fast forward a moment or so. And Blake just to remind everybody, hasn't read this book. This is the one book of the series he hasn't read. So, and we've talked about this before, but you know, Barty Crouch Jr. was in jail, was in Azkaban, and then his mother ended up taking Polyjuice Potion. The family conjured up this idea, so the mother takes Polyjuice Potion and is in Azkaban as they switch, and vice versa. He then takes Polyjuice Potion of his mom, mm-hmm. and he goes home with his dad, looking like his mom. His mom, who's sickly, dies, but looks like Barty Crouch Jr. Mm-hmm. So they do bury what looks to be Barty Crouch Jr. And then, of course, Crouch lies and says his wife has died, which
right.
she did. But, like, you know what I mean? So that way they wouldn't be looking for her when actually he's now snuck home Barty Crouch Jr. And he keeps Barty Crouch Jr. at home under the Imperious Curse.
Right.
So,
it shows you perspective.
Yes.
I mean, did Barty Crouch wife, did she die?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, but not the way that we think that she, you know, it's
yeah.
just, it shows you the importance and I, when I say you, I mean the royal you, yes, the royal we, if you will. It shows you the importance of perspective and how that is used in storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not necessarily trickery. It's not necessarily, you know, sleight of hand. It's just a tool that you can use to manipulate any kind of device that you need in order to forward your story.
Yeah. So like you said, you know, they get all of this insight through Sirius, and it really gives us a beautiful backstory into Barty Crouch Jr., that he was actually on track to be Minister of Magic. Mm. Like, he was that big of a deal. And when this all went down with his son, it just broke him, and he continued to be broken. So it's understandable. Sirius is giving credibility almost, not saying it's not credibility, but he's explaining why he lashed out at Winky. Saying, yes, he treated his inferior poorly, and that's very bad, but he did it because he's so upset. Like, how could it be another member of his family?
He's that giving a justification almost.
Yes, yeah. Yes, that like his name has already been dragged through the mud. You know, he lost his wife, he lost his son, and now he's finally kind of getting back up. And now his elf is the one that does it. So, of course, he's going to go look to see if there could potentially be anybody else, because he can't have another piece of slander against the Crouch name.
Yeah, and that's a big deal. And, you know, there's another thing that happens in this chapter, too, where this chapter could have gone so wrong. This chapter could have been the chapter from, let's see, Prisoner of Azkaban, where it's McGonagall and they're talking back and forth, and it could have been that chapter,
yes,
but it wasn't.
No.
This is someone that, again, that we trust, mm-hmm, that is giving Harry and Hermione information they're discovering for the first time about topics they would never know.
No.
And at the same time, we're discovering those same things from Sirius.
Mm-hmm.
So it's only natural for us to want to sit there and read it along with them and be like, oh my God, this is all the information that is really pertinent, yet at the same time not pertinent.
Yeah, because it's not true.
Because it's not true. So like, it's just, it's a wild chapter.
Mm.
And it's a great way to begin the third act. I mean, as you can see, Mary, we are well beyond now the halfway point. Mm-hmm. And this, I think, is what ushers in the third act of this story, where it sets us on a course to start to understand Barty Crouch, Barty Crouch Jr., the Moody of it all, faux Moody of it all, Snape.
All the while in this chapter, though, sprinkling in, it could be other people. It mm-hmm. could be Snape. It could be Ludo Bagman. It could be Percy Weasley. Like,
yeah,
you know, just all these extra people where the one person who it is talked about being dead, and like, yes, he's dead. Yes, he's buried. Like, mm-hmm, all this stuff happens. So it's just a really neat chapter that also gets to start once again with kids just at school. So I love when the author does these things where like major plot drop, right? Like,
yeah,
major necessary information. And like you said, it's taken from a completely different perspective. And yet we start the chapter with Rita Skeeter drama, and
right,
we get, you know, some Snape drama, and we get a little bit of the Death Eater kind of stuff. And so it just, they all feel, when you're reading it, like they're equal at first. You know, you've got the Karkaroff in here. So
yeah,
we're throwing in all these different people of who could it be, and how is Rita Skeeter able to know this stuff? Maybe she has an invisibility cloak. So maybe she's, you know, they don't say it, but they're saying like, this girl is on the grounds. Like, she,
yeah,
overheard a private conversation between Victor Krum and Hermione that took place after the second task. Like, he pulled her away at the lake.
Uh-huh.
So somehow she was on campus when she's not allowed to be. So you're just kind of getting all these little drippings of whodunit, you know, throughout this chapter. In a way, as I said, that the author does interestingly, because it's really, if this was by itself, if the Barty Crouch storyline was just by itself, you'd be sitting there really analyzing it.
Right.
But it's mixed in so many other things that everything else feels the same weight.
Yeah, absolutely. And the fact
the fact that Hermione can easily just shrug off everything that Pansy Pocket's in and all the Slytherins are doing, or she's like, yeah, whatever, that's fine.
Yeah, that she's talked about now in this article.
Yeah, and like, it's okay, whatever. But then she gets pissed about Winky.
Yeah.
You know, and how it just boils her blood when she recognizes that Body Crouch Jr. does fire Winky in like in this way, and now she has this reason for that, and she feels vindicated almost about her feeling. And even Ron recognizing that, you know, as a character, we are seeing a recognition in Ron that he is concerned about Crumb, and he's concerned about Crumb's intentions, and how that seems, despite his glee in telling all of these stories, how he fought 50 mer people or whatever it was and he did everything. You know, he still has very serious, pardon the pun, very serious feelings for Hermione that I don't think he understands quite yet, but he's getting there.
And it's funny because, you know, the article starts off really talking about Harry and Hermione, and yet Harry and Hermione obviously are just in the friend zone, and Ron doesn't act weird about them now at this article. His focus is really on Hermione and Crumb, and yet it continues to water that seed and that fear that we get to see when Ron has to attack the Horcrux. You know that, like, there has been this long storyline that maybe Harry and Hermione have something. So I just think it's interesting that it's mentioned here. It doesn't boil his blood yet in this article instance, but you know, it just continues to water it. The other thing that I love that Ron does is when they're talking with Sirius, Sirius is like, I don't know if I could talk about this kind of stuff. You know, it's pretty dark. And Ron says, you know, stop coddling us like we're little kids, you know, tell us the truth. And this is something that continually goes on through the story, that these teenagers can handle the difficult conversations. They can handle the truth, and they're sick and tired of adults sheltering them from it because they're in it. They're like thick in it, and they want to know the truth. So I like that Sirius tells them that.
Just like that. A winner. That, Mary, is the exact reason why this chapter is the reason why I love Sirius Black so much. Mm-hmm. Not because, you know, the kids demand that he give them the information, but that he recognizes that they have been
babied.
Yeah. And I think he recognizes the fact that something's coming. Mm-hmm. And if these kids have any chance at whatever it is, they need to know. Mm-hmm. And they can't be coddled anymore. And he gives them the respect. It's not even about, like, you need this information to survive. It's just person to person, human to human, this is the truth. And it's an unfettered truth. It is unfiltered. It is a vibrant truth of truth. He recognizes, he's like, okay, fine, you know what? Yeah, let's talk about it. And he gives him that. And I find that remarkable in that character because, you know, throughout this chapter, Sirius is talking about Barty Crouch and how, you know, there was this point where he says, yeah, he was, Barty Crouch Jr. was writhing in pain and like he would scream and screech at night. And, you know, it lasted for a couple of days, but then he went silent because they all go silent, all of them, every single one. And they lose their will to live and everything, and that, which reminded me about Hagrid, by the way. Yep. But I think about it, and I think about Sirius as a person, how he is able to just live life after Azkaban. I mean, given how it's been spoken, you know, about like the kind of environment that it is.
The Azkaban
And not only is it the Azkaban of it all, but it's the Dementors of it all too, right? Mm-hmm. How they are there specifically to suck the joy out of your life. And the fact that Sirius can actually like have a conversation is remarkable.
Agreed.
And he can, he's able to parse right and wrong, respect versus disrespect, knowledge versus versus truth and falsity. Like, these are all complex things, especially for someone who's lived in this
trauma.
Environment and trauma for so long, is the way that he has. And he can give Harry the kind of love. He's like, oh, this is what I'm your godfather. Like, this is what I do. Like, oh my God. Like, if you don't love Sirius Black after this chapter,
I know,
especially because he turns from being a dog and he like has his robes on and everything. And he takes the paper out of his mouth. Like, how could you not love that? How could you? Oh,
he's pretty awesome.
Sirius is the best.
He surely is.
As I get older, I think I might like Sirius more than Snape.
And that, I think, will continue to flip as we go further and after Sirius dies and you get more Snape time.
What do you mean?
I think that you're going to love them both.
Yeah.
Since I know you. And I think that this book, and then obviously we have like the Sirius love fest of Order of the Phoenix, and then he's dead. But then you get your Snape time.
Right.
So I'm just saying, Blake, just hold on tight, Spider Monkey, because for you to love these two characters, you're going to have a lot to sink your teeth into.
Yes, I totally agree. Fair enough.
So I think we've covered, you know, the Sirius conversation, and just I love that he's able to meet with the trio in this little cave, and they get to see Buckbeak and do all that stuff, and he has the little special name now of Snuffles, not Padfoot, because Padfoot might be known. So I just love it. Quick thing, you know, he says that only Dumbledore knows that he's an Animagus because, you know, he's an unregistered one,
right?
And it made me think, in the last chapter, Harry was talking about, oh, I wish I could have become an Animagus, and that way I could be swimming in the lake. I am actually surprised that Harry doesn't become one later in life like his dad.
Yeah, that would be something.
That, you know, I know he's got his hands full in his seventh year, so he can't be doing all these searching for Horcruxes and everything. I mean, he could have, but he probably would have gotten really annoyed keeping that leaf under his tongue the entire time. But I don't know. I just kind of would have figured, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know when it would have come in the epilogue, like, you know, okay, kids, have fun on the train, gallops away.
Yeah, right.
You know, but I just think it's an interesting thing that I feel like that is something that Harry Potter would do in like a midlife crisis.
Oh, that's his.
You know what I never got to do?
That's his red Corvette.
Yes.
Yeah, it's him turning into a deer. It's his red Corvette.
Stag. Ginny asks him, what do you want for Christmas? Mandrake. And patience, Ginny. Patience. I become a stag. Goodness
man.
Gracious. So, you know, let's backtrack and let's go back to school. Yeah. You know, we've got this article, of course, with Rita Skeeter and Witch Weekly. And Pansy Parkinson just continues to be a jerk, making fun of Hermione. You know, Pansy did go to the Yule Ball with Draco.
Yes.
Which is, of course, an interesting thing. And we're talking about love potions and whether love potions are allowed or not allowed.
Yeah.
That's an interesting thing because I think someone in it, I think, says that they're illegal. But they're not illegal because the Weasleys end up selling love potions.
Yeah, it's Rita that says that they're not allowed on campus, the
love
potions.
Okay, that I appreciate.
Right. And, you know, here's another little bit of a plot drop, too, where it's, you know, Snape is saying to Harry, you know, I know it was you who stole X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. You know, you stole, which was it? It was it wasn't the gillyweed. It was the other thing that was stolen. I can't remember what it was. Anyway, boom slang skin. You know, Harry is the one that thinks, well, yeah, of course the boom slang skin was stolen because, you know, Hermione needed it for the Polyjuice potion back in year two. Right. Mm-hmm. But it's not that. It's the fact that it's Body Crouch Jr. as Full Moody stealing the Broom Slang skin.
Yes.
So, like, it's again, it's these little breadcrumbs that the author is dropping for you.
Yeah, you know, when he's calling Potter out for this, you know, did you get the gillyweed? Did you get the Broom Slang skin? Like, I know what you're doing. Harry doesn't question it because he thinks, like, yeah, we did take it. You know, Hermione took it in the second year. He's not realizing that Snape saying these are taken
recently.
This year. Like, yes, like that product is missing right now.
Perspective.
And then you're wondering too, like, you know, he's able to say like, no, I didn't do it because of course Dobby did it. So Harry keeps his eyes down a lot and he's doing this because he doesn't want to get angry. Snape infuriates him. And Harry just keeps telling himself like, I know that I'm right because I am right. Like, yeah, use this stuff, but I didn't get it. And he's able to keep his eyes down. He doesn't want to cost the Gryffindors points. But what's interesting is Snape can do occlumency. Yeah. So I loved the mention of Harry, you know, looking down.
Sure.
And really it's Harry just trying to like calm himself down. But I also wonder, is Snape doing the occlumency? Is he able to see that Harry is telling the truth and Snape's just trying to piece some things out? Like, who the heck is doing this? And these things are missing right now.
Yeah.
I know Harry used Gillyweed. I saw him put it in his mouth.
Yeah, right.
So bada bing, bada boom, and I'm missing Boom Slimeskin. I know these kids did some Polyjuice stuff a couple years ago.
Yeah, it's interesting. That's an interesting take, Mary, because you have to question whether or not the author knows about occlumency right now when she's rewriting this book.
Mm-hmm. And then he does, Harry gets mad and he yells, like, I haven't been anywhere near your office. And the author does note that Snape, like, pierces his eyes. So he is able to meet the eyes at this time. So to me, Snape does figure out, okay, it's not Harry at this point when he's arguing with him. You know, Harry for so long, and Harry doesn't even know about the eye thing. You know, he's just like, it wasn't me. And Snape does, the author does say they finally do make eye contact. So I think it's just interesting. Because then, of course, we do see Karkaroff with Snape. They're talking about the death.
By the way, Karkaroff, can you be any more of an idiot?
Just coming in.
What are
class.
You doing, guys?
These kids are all here.
Just bursting in. I need to talk to you. You see this?
See this crazy stuff?
This is bananas, right?
Oh, my gosh. Right in front of everybody. I can't even. How do you think? Okay, so if Snape's private stores are all locked up, how are people breaking in and getting it?
What do you mean?
How did they get the stuff if it's locked?
Well, I mean, Dobby can...
Oh, Dobby's a different thing.
Yeah, Dobby can get in and out.
Dobby's a free elf.
Yeah.
He can do whatever he wants. You're right.
He can do it.
And then, is it just like Aloha Mora? Is Mad-Eye Moody, Fo Moody? Aloha Mora. I mean, why lock things up?
It's a good question.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like... I mean, it's probably the same in anything, right? So if you have something locked up in a room and something goes missing from that locked room, like, you know that someone picked the lock.
Yes.
So maybe it's just that simple.
And now he brings out the Veritas Serum.
Oh, and this is a good question, Mary, because like in the kinds of things that Snape has done to his students... Mm-hmm. You know, whether it was Snape calling out Neville in some cases or being awful with Harry or whatever. Where does him reading the article fit in that long line of bullying? And then also, where does that threat of Veritaserum fall within that long line of bullying? Because it's not just that he is saying it to Potter in a private conversation. Like, this is happening in front of people. Like, the whole class. He's just saying, yeah, you know what? This could just slip right into your mouth. Oops, sorry. Like,
you know.
Where does this fall on that bullying line for you? Is this one of the worst ones?
Once again, man, it's 80s, 90s kids. So good point. I just feel like things were really different back then. You know, you think about what teachers were able to do in detention and how they could make kids like clean things. Things about
scrape gum off.
Oh my gosh, like the times we had to stand out there when we were punished and clap the eraser things together. Think about the crunchy moms right now.
All that chalk dust going in your lungs.
Yes.
Oh my God.
That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about.
You remember seeing the big marks on the brick walls, you know, with all the chalk? You'd be like, oh, someone got in trouble.
I would do that for fun.
Of course you would, you
I was bored.
Dork.
I was bored.
You are such a dork.
Things. Yeah, but it's but that's, I like to just keep it in context. I don't think Snape would be A, doing this in front of the class, B, doing all this bullying if it took place in 2022. I just like people to, if you weren't around in the 80s and 90s, my friends, just know. Things were different.
Yo,
and then when
different.
You even go further back a generation,
ooh,
the teachers
different.
Like hurt the kids.
Yeah,
like
rulers.
Straight up hurt them. So I don't know when they had to stop hurting kids.
I feel like that stopped in like the 70s.
Yeah.
70s.
But it may not have started in the magical community. It's just stopped yet in the magical community.
Yeah, I know.
That's
true.
Yet.
Good point.
So I'm just saying it's very different. Yeah, because by now we're in the 90s. But still, it was different then. All right. And teachers had no problem making fun of you, mm-hmm. at least to me, in the 90s. No
oh,
problem.
Oh, yeah, none. Zero.
My teachers would laugh at me.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go home and you tell your parents and they're like, well, you must have done something stupid.
You screwed that up, didn't
yeah.
you?
So youngins, just know you got it good a little bit right now. I know
good. You don't even have it good. You got it made.
They're
you got
not even
gold.
In school half the time, Blake. It's not made in gold yet, okay? We're figuring things out, all right? Okay, so, but I just wanted to note that. And then, yeah, we got Karkaroff coming in. So I just love all these little things to truly distract you as a reader as you're going along.
You know, something has... Since I read this chapter, something stands out to me where, you know, Sirius has all of the backstory. And as, you know, as a necessity for the writing, you need that, right? Like the kids have to be brought up on up to snuff on all the backstory so that when, because ultimately you have to be brought up to snuff on that backstory, so that when the reveal does happen, you're like, oh, okay, I got it. Yep, that makes sense. But given how much Sirius knows and how involved he was during the first war with
Voldemort, he was in the Order. Yeah.
And he's in the Order and, you know, he has a lot of base knowledge, especially about the Death Eaters.
Yeah.
The way that when Harry describes Karkaroff clutching his left arm.
Yeah.
Sirius is like, wait, what? What, like, he doesn't know anything about it. Like, he doesn't know anything about the Dark Mark. He doesn't understand it. And he just, like, kind of whistles past it. How does Sirius not know
about the Dark Mark?
About the Dark Mark.
Okay.
Like,
the tattoo.
Either, yeah. Like, either he doesn't know, and that to me doesn't feel like it makes sense.
Okay.
Or he's lying purposely,
okay.
Which then kind of flies in the face of him being honest.
So to me, Sirius didn't really hang out with Death Eaters, okay, until Halloween.
Yeah,
when he got arrested. And then he was thrown in Azkaban. Now, the Dark Mark tattoo is strong when Voldemort's alive and when Voldemort's coming to power. And on Halloween night, Voldemort was defeated. So I highly doubt everyone's tattoos were like strong and vivid and all this stuff. And I highly doubt that by the time he was thrown in jail and other Death Eaters were in jail with them, that they weren't like, oh man, my tat's fading. Like, I don't think that was a talked about thing because it wasn't aching. It wasn't strong. It wasn't showing because Voldemort at that time was.
Yeah, but you would imagine that in his battles with Death Eaters.
No. Yeah.
That the Dark Mark would have been shown at some point. It would have been like a known piece of information about them. Like, that's how you're able to tell who is a dark wizard or not.
Everyone's wearing robes, man. I give them the benefit of the doubt. I think the timing, I think if it was different timing and he was around Death Eaters in Azkaban prior to Voldemort's demise, I would agree.
Well, you would think like the Yakuza,
people would talk
right?
about it.
The Yakuza have tattoos that will tell you.
I don't know
that
what a Yakuza is.
Whatever.
Is that like, a real thing?
Yeah, sure. Or like Russian Mafia or whatever. They all got tattoos that tell you that they're in the thing.
Well, they
or
have to
Roman
show
soldiers
it.
would have the SPQR
okay,
on their...
But you'd have to see it.
Yeah, but it was a known thing. So, like, why wouldn't a big tattoo on someone's forearm be a known thing?
Because maybe it wasn't a known thing. A lot of the Death Eaters were undercover, and I would see this as being more like, you secretly show it. Like, I don't think they're walking around being like, everyone, look at your arms. Because then the ministry could just say, okay, everybody, before you come into work, you have to roll up your sleeves. Everyone has to wear short sleeves when they go to this restaurant. Like, I think that if everyone knew that, I think it's more, you know, because you are a Death Eater.
This feels a little
otherwise, Karkaroff. No, because think about it. It's not in, like, the history books. If this was, like, a well-known thing, Karkaroff wouldn't be doing it in front of everybody.
Yeah.
I think it's, like, an inside thing, like the little secret, like the Masons. know a little secret word. You got to know.
We've been watching too much Oak Island.
We have. So that's my two cents. It's that it was after Voldemort's demise that he got thrown into Azkaban, so the peeps weren't talking about it. And it's a secret thing.
Fair. I think it's a stretch, but I'll go along to get along.
Thank you.
You're welcome. anything else you want to talk about this chapter, my darling?
No, that's all.
Yeah, I think we're good. I think we're good. I mean, I like the whole process of them. Part of my favorite part of this chapter was the process of them figuring out Barty Crouch and understanding his motives and like trying to piece it together. Like there's that great scene that you mentioned where Ron's talking and Sirius just holds up his hand, mm-hmm. and everybody stops. Mm-hmm. Like that feels natural. That feels real. Like, and like all the kids are bickering back and forth and Sirius says something and they all stop to wait to listen. Like, mm-hmm. I just like how he is trying to figure it out along with them. It's not that he's talking down. They're equals figuring this thing out together. I thought that was a great bit of characterization from
the author. One thing I didn't like is it just made me sad since Sirius has had to be eating rats. There goes my idea of him hanging out in Rio. Drinking cocktails on the beach.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, we've known he hasn't been, but it's just sad.
What a way to ruin a dream.
Yeah.
You know?
One day he'll go to Grimwald Place.
All right, Marvin, you ready for a different perspective time?
Yes.
All right, here we go. Let's do it, shall we?
Holy cricket! You're Harry Potter! I'm Hermione Granger. And you are?
I am Padma Patel. Is that the one?
Padma?
Is that the okay. one who Ron dated?
Sure, whatever. One of the Patils.
Oh, shoot.
Sure, you're not only tearing up my book.
I don't know which one it is.
Okay, you're one of the Patils that dated Ron.
The one
Ron.
That went on a date.
Sure. What's up, Padma?
You know, I think I misjudged him.
Why did you think you got the beat on him?
Well, you know, I think it was just like a whole flurry of excitement. We were all excited about the Yule Ball.
Uh-huh,
and
yep.
Let's be real. I think he had a crush on Hermione Granger.
No, you wouldn't say.
Once she was off the market, I realized, like, he's actually quite interesting when he's not pining for her. Uh-huh. And he's very heroic. I've never noticed that.
Well, he
about
did
him.
Fight off all those mer people.
I know. And he's just really interesting.
You know what I heard, actually, what? Padma? I heard that he was the one who saved Harry.
I heard that too. Like, and I kind of would believe it.
I would believe it. I mean, that red hair, those flowing red locks. Oof.
He's a little strong, you know? And Harry kind of. I don't know.
I would say maybe he's been hitting the gym. Did you see his chest filling out?
I mean, Harry wears glasses. How do those work underwater?
I know. Come on now.
Right. And
are you telling me some little weed is going to be able to get him to breathe? No. You know that Ron
held his breath that entire time.
I know. Oh, my God.
So next time there's a Yule Ball, I think I'll ask him.
Oh, sounds good to me, Padma.
Or if that's who I am. Twin problems.
Oh, man. All right. Time for some emails. Are you ready? Let's do it.
Oh, Miles here.
Oh, goodness gracious. All right. This one comes from Dejana. She says, do you think that Snape dies in the end, hashtag spoilers, because he subbed in Lupin's...
I thought that was the question.
Yeah. subbed in Lupin's place in Prisoner of Azkaban, therefore throwing himself into the teaching defense against the dark arts curse. Marvin, your thoughts?
Well, I always saw the curse, not that you had to die, but that you would only be teaching that class for 1 year.
Because bad stuff's happening to you.
Yeah, so yeah. I would believe that that part of the curse, yes. Do I believe that that's why he dies? No.
Yeah, because there's also one giant... Yeah, that's the giant loophole in all of this. Is Umbridge does not die.
Yeah.
After Order of the Phoenix, you think that she does, but she don't. She comes back with a force.
She's there.
Yeah, so... No, I don't think he dies because of that, Dejana.
I think he dies because Voldemort is a soulless snake.
This one comes from Morgan. Morgan says, hey guys, I've written y'all before, but today I just wanted to say thank you for not getting political. Aww. I love Harry Potter and I love listening to breakdowns of the Potter world. And I've listened to other Potter podcasts, but have had to quit listening because they got too political.
Truth.
Obviously, there are social and political ideologies written into these books, which tie into real life. But what I love about your podcast is you do not give your opinions. In the latest episode, after she had listened to this, and after she had wrote it, you guys were talking about media and how people believe wild and stretched stories, but you didn't say which side of the aisle to believe. It seems like that never happens anymore. Everyone is always trying to tell you what to believe, and y'all have yet to do that. This ended up being longer than I intended. I hope it makes sense.
It does.
Thank you for the amazing podcast. P.S. Mary's Rita Skeeter accent was hilarious.
Oh, thank you.
Well, you know, Morgan, I just want to say thank you for recognizing that. Mary and I... put a lot of effort, and it's not to say that we are skewed one way or the other. We're not. I think we're pretty centrist, to be honest. But you know, I would say that we have our leanings, but we're pretty centered people, and I think that probably comes through in the podcast because
we believe in the art of conversation.
Yeah, conversation's important, and that is what this country was founded upon. You know, and again, I will reference the whole Hamilton aspect when it's like when Jefferson is talking to Madison, saying, "Listen, I know you hate Hamilton, but let's just listen to what he has to say." That is the crux of the American government. If you can't get that right, then don't bother having one.
But because Blake and I do have a social media platform, we do try to not allow politics to muddle our Lumos that we're trying to spread in the world.
Yeah.
And yet it's not that we're apolitical.
Just that it doesn't belong in this platform.
Yeah.
You know, like I remember the day of January 6th, right? We had a podcast to do.
Yeah.
And it was like a lot of people said, well, you shouldn't have done it that day. And my argument at the time was, and it
you
still
need
is,
more Lumos then.
This is absolutely when we should be doing this podcast because this is when you need this kind of stuff to remember that life is normal and life is important outside of these big things. And, you know, there's a platform for those kind of conversations. And if you want those conversations, go to that platform. Here, we're here to entertain and to have fun and talk about Potter. And that's what we're here for.
Yep.
So that's that. This one comes from Rebecca. She says, "Hey, Mary and Blake, I found you while I was looking for a Potter podcast and so glad to have found yours.
Hey.
I've just caught up to real time and now starting on your other podcasts as well.
Thank you. By the way,
go to maryandblake.com. Check out all the great podcasts, including Outlander Cast, which is coming back, The Last Kingdom with Mary and Blake, which is current, but also coming back.
Mm-hmm.
This Is Us 2 happening there, and Bridgerton with Mary and Blake.
So glad I got COVID just in time for the busiest time of year.
The one thing I, Rebecca, did want to say to Blake is that you are right. You are not a Hufflepuff because not everyone can be a Hufflepuff.
Hmm.
We are the friends that if it doesn't matter if we saw you last week or 3 years ago, that if you reach out saying you need us, we will be there for you no matter the distance. We are fiercely loyal that if one of our friends is on the outs with someone else, they are automatically on the outs with us. It doesn't matter if the falling out is warranted or not. We will not forgive until our friend does. And even then, we will always be watching you because your past action hurts someone we care about. We are the sounding board and the keeper of secrets. For our friends know that someone told to us will never be repeated, even to our significant others. We are the ones who check in on others, even if we are the ones who need checking in on. So, Blake, you are right that you are not a Hufflepuff, because to be a Hufflepuff, you have to be willing to drop everything if your friend calls on you. Rebecca, you know what I say to you?
No, Rebecca,
that's right.
I love you.
That's
and
right.
And you are 100% right. 100% right.
Sorry for the rant, says Rebecca, but I needed to say that, and I know you rank on Hufflepuff in good fun, of course.
Thanks, Rebecca.
Now, I do have a question for you both, though.
Oh.
Would you rather have had Neville's parents survive Bellatrix's Cruciatus curse with their sanity intact, meaning they could have raised Neville, or have Harry grow up with the Dursleys being accepted and treated the same as Dudley? And if raised the same as Dudley, do you think he would have accepted being a wizard or have had an aversion to it because of the Dursleys Stive for normalcy. I love the podcast and all that you do. Thank you so much for the Lumos in this time of Nox. Hope you and your family stay healthy and happy this year. Mary, by the way, I hope you do not see this slight on you, but the Disney nerd in me cannot help but point this out. I know you love saying bippity boppity boo, but that is an incantation said by a fairy to produce magic and may not be the best reference for magic used by witches and wizards.
Truth.
So, Marvin.
Yes.
Your thoughts. Would you rather have Neville raised by his parents who survived with their sanity after Bellatrix's Cruciatus curse, or would you rather have Harry be a well-loved and accepted member of the Dursley family?
I would have chosen Neville.
Me too.
I think that Harry, even though he had a terrible upbringing and it was very traumatizing, he actually handles it quite well.
Yes.
And not everybody could. Not everybody could grow
I
up
couldn't.
And balance that, but Harry does. Whereas Neville isn't treated with love and isn't respected and is bullied and doesn't even have like a best friend. And his grandmother always puts him down. And I don't think it would have hurt Neville's character if he had his parents still. I think that Neville still would have slain Nagini in the end. I think that Neville still would have been a great friend and joined Dumbledore's army. I just think that Neville would have gotten some of the love that I wish that he had received in
yeah,
life.
Yeah, and you make a fair point, Mary, that I think if Harry is accepted by the Dursleys the way that he should have been, there's an argument to be made that there's no story.
Well, I think that because Harry had that, he's always looking out for the downtrodden.
Yeah.
Because he's had his eyes open to that. And I think sometimes when you've lived a very privileged life, you aren't necessarily able to see other people's struggles or how people may be different from you, and not see them as still a whole person. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
All right. Fair enough. Oh, by the way, there is one thing I do want to say.
Yes.
To our boy Baker, I was supposed to send him a shirt.
Oh.
And I didn't do it. Yet.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And Baker, I promise I'm going to email you as soon as tomorrow as I'm recording this. And I haven't done it because we've been banana land in House Larson for the past number of weeks, as you can tell, because we haven't had a Potterverse in a little bit here. So do know that I have not forgotten about you. Do know that I will get in touch and I will have that thing sent to you as I promised. Mm. So that's that. Okay. Ready to close this out?
I am.
Let's do it.
Thank you all so incredibly much for being a huge source of Lumos in our time of Nox.
Oh, yeah.
Truly, Harry is like a Snuggie for me. So it's a warm blanket. And as we have been dealing with health issues, I just appreciate your patience and I appreciate the community that you continue to bring. So if you're not yet in the Marion Blake Facebook group, we do encourage you to be there. There's a lot of Potter fans there. And we do have plans to keep this rocking and rolling, even though we have a busy couple of months ahead of us. So stay tuned. Make sure that you're on our complimentary texting list. You just need to text the phone number 81010. Once again, it's 81010 if you're in the U.S. and in the message field at Elderwand. Just the at symbol with ELDERWAND. You're going to get a complimentary text from me as we get our new episodes out, and that is the deal.
Yeah, awesome. Go to marionblake.com. Check out all the great podcasts, especially since we have a lot of them coming out. You want to stick to our social channels as they will be announced there. But if you want the true information of what's happening, marionblake.com, that's where you want to go to stay up to date with all of the crap that we got going on.
It's not crap, it's beautiful. My name's Mary.
My name is Blake.
Mischief Managed.